broadcasting from Hollywood, California. It's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Real Housewives of New York City's Luann and Tom's marriage is canceled after 7 months. ABC halts their live version of The Little Mermaid. Hallmark Channel introduces a new network. And Will and Grace returns to NBC. This and a lot more with Marissa Serafini. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from the senior content producer at AfterBuzz TV Networks and my friend, Marissa Serafini.
Hi, Grant.
Hey, good to have you on the rants.
Thanks so much for asking me. I feel like this is going to be really fun.
Yes. Marissa, you're such a hard worker. You belong over here on these rants, ranting about Hollywood. And I mean, my God, Marissa is like a fixture at AfterBuzz. We have a lot of AfterBuzz listeners on with this show, which is great.
Oh, great.
So, so I'm sure they've either heard of you or they don't know that you're like the silent warrior behind the scenes, and we're going to shine a light on all that coming up.
I'm excited.
Good. As always, I want to give a shout out to our spotlight to a listener who I enjoy and is always very active with listening to the show and writing to me over on Twitter. So to this episode, I'm going to shout out Nick Caggiano, who's very involved and loves the rants. And I love you for listening. So keep listening. Thank you. Also, if you want more rants, you can find me over on patreon.com/grantsrants, and you can support the show. It's very low, like a low dollar amount per month. This bonus content, it's great. Check it out if you like. That's patreon.com/grantsrants. And I also feel like I should probably make a little announcement for myself on this show. I am now going to be contributing and writing for Reality T. So I'm adding a fourth job to my life these days.
Good for you.
Yes, thank you. But this is a new hustle. And we had a great co-host a couple episodes back, Erin Martin. And she writes Reality T. And it got kind of the ball rolling in my mind. And, you know, I do a lot of podcasts, talk about a lot of housewives, do a lot of Reality TV. So going to Reality T is very exciting, and I hope that you'll follow some of my writing over there. I'll post it on Twitter and let you know on the podcast and over at AfterBuzz what's up, you know, what's going up if you're interested in checking it out. So that's some exciting news that I'm excited to announce, and I haven't told anyone yet, so here we are.
There you go. Good for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so up your alleys.
Yeah. It just seemed to make sense. It's like, why am I not doing this? You know, so I've had a lot of back and forth, and it's all good. So I'm grateful. So let's talk about a few things. Now, Marissa, I know you're not a viewer of The Real Housewives.
No.
But a bomb went off this week with Luann de Lesseps, or D'Agostino, getting a divorce from her husband, Tom. And everyone wants to know what I think about it. Well, let's get into the details first. And I want to know, as an outsider, how you view this. Because in the Housewives universe, it's like a huge deal slash a big joke. Because this is right. Someone who was only married for 7 months, shouted it from the rooftops to anyone that would listen, used it as an excuse for a better bedroom, trips, or just everything. I just got married. And that's all that she wants is like some prize for this marriage, which was built on unsteady ground, to say the very least. She married this guy in his 50s who's never been married before.
Oh, so sounds already like a gold digger.
Yeah.
I think my first question is, because I'm not informed in the reality television world in that sense for the Real Housewives, which Housewives is it under?
New York.
Beverly Hills, New York?
Okay. New York, yeah. So she does come from money, I mean, apparently. But I think in general, trying to marry a man at that point in his life when he's used to being a bachelor and on his own, and then thrusting him into this reality TV New York society, like you got to sign contracts and release forms and go to these events with me and take pictures. It's kind of a lot for a man of that age to adjust. But I mean, he also was a womanizer. I mean, let's be, you know, that's how he was portrayed consistently on the show. So everybody knew this marriage was not really worth much. But this all leads to my rant of the day.
Grant, rant of the day.
My rant has to go to these people who are older, who feel as though they have to get married. Like, these are people who, like, don't have kids, who are, like, over 50, like, they have to rush to get married. I just don't understand it. like, when you're that age, like, can you just live together and share your life together and move in? But do you have to go through all these expensive weddings? I mean, look at this. This is an example of, you know, if they didn't get married, they would spare themselves a lot of drama.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also maybe if he is, so he was already so successful to be by himself so long and have this career, it sounds like he was flourishing pretty well on his own. But I think with the pressures of society, maybe because he was in the spotlight and he was around people that were also in the spotlight, maybe there was an added societal pressure to mm-hmm. be married just to maybe build up his figure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get that. Like, they definitely made this whole wedding like a social climbing, like a social event. Really? So I guess once that was all over and there was nothing else to celebrate or to invite people to.
Well, really, was there really love involved, or was it really more for publicity?
And well, that's what people are asking.
Yeah, and the fact that it lasted only 7 months, like, it's not even a year. Did they sign a prenup? Who knows?
I know. Is the paperwork completely filed before it's right. over?
Will she get some of his assets when they divorce? Who knows?
Only 2 weeks ago, she was on Watch What Happens Live, Luann, and she said, oh, we're having a very passionate love affair going, because she allegedly hit him in a public restaurant. And so they were like, oh, what's going on? She's like, it's just very passionate. I'm like, I don't know about that. So
a passionate hit?
Yeah, I guess. So, I don't know. With her, a lot of people are treating it like a total joke. I get it, like all over social media, because she really... She set herself up to fail so bad that, like, it's embarrassing. It's really a disaster. The image she put out there for the rug to be pulled out. And she did file, but apparently there was a race to the lawyers to see which one was going to file first.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So it's just, I kind of feel better on a human level because you can tell she's really upset. But also, it's like, you gotta be careful how much you put out there. I mean, if you spit up in the air, it falls in your face.
And yeah, it's kind of like karma. If you're going to really build it up, you have to kind of live up to it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like when it first started that she was the one who was really putting it out there, and maybe she was the one who wanted it more. But the fact now it's not turning out, she's the one who's also having the big downfall from it.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So the last thing I'll say on it is the reunion has already taped for the Real Housewives of New York. And look, they need to get her in a one-on-one. She's headed off to Europe, so I don't know how they're going to do it, because the finale is this Wednesday and the reunion is next Wednesday. So, or at the time of taping this show, the reunion is like less than 2 weeks away, right? So they need to get this recorded if they're going to do it. And that sometimes if the housewives can't make it, or if there's a development, like Andy Cohen will do a one-on-one, they'll just kind of split it and put it in there just to kind of cover the latest, because things do break. And this is so noteworthy because her whole storyline was how happy she was to be married. So I feel like they have to cover this.
Oh, definitely.
Figure it out. Even if you have to Skype her in.
Drama.
Yes. This has been my rant of the day.
That's my opinion!
So let's take a look at a different topic. Also in the world of television, these TV musicals are here, and we've had, you know, Hairspray and the Wiz, and what was the one before that?
There was Grease Live.
Yes.
I actually was at Grease Live.
Oh, really?
At the Fox. It was actually recorded at the WB studios, but it aired on Fox.
Huh.
Yeah, that was fun.
Really well done.
Yeah, I think out of all the ones that we've had so far, I think that one just did everything right in production and music and casting. There were so many things about that particular production that was great.
Yeah.
And because I was physically there, I'm kind of a little biased. So I had the actual on-set experience. So
I was definitely more into the whole like live action, like out, you know, outside, like the way Hairspray was done too, where they were in the street, in the back lot, and they jumped over here, and with Grease, with the big Ferris wheel and everything at the end, versus the stage ones, you know, the ones that are just kind of done in the
Sound
studio. Yeah, that was
Peter Pan.
Yeah, I forgot about Peter Pan.
I actually enjoyed Peter Pan. Yeah. I feel that was hit and miss with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to watch the ratings, because Sound of Music did really well, and then the others have done moderately well, but they say that these don't turn a profit. They're about $20 million each to produce, and you really can't get any aftermarket value. Like, you're not going to sell them on DVDs or whatever.
Well, they do. They're available usually on DVD maybe 2 weeks later, but who buys them when they're already recorded on DVD or they're already recorded on your DVR, or because usually the next day, because they're on Fox or NBC or whatever network that's airing them, they're already available on Hulu Plus the next day.
Oh,
so
true.
Who's going to buy it on DVD 2 weeks later?
Yeah, right. So ABC is in a little bit of a mess. I mean, I think a lot of a mess. I mean, I'm looking at what they're doing on Sunday night. They haven't had a right Sunday night in years.
No.
I just have a hard time with ABC. I'm very critical of them because they're very celebratory of themselves. You know, I think that they're really into like that brand and, you know, they try to outdo other people with their shows, but they really don't have much behind it, in my opinion. Just me. And so they've got this musical for the Little Mermaid, and it's postponed. Apparently, they've even built all the sets for this. It was supposed to happen in October. So really around the corner, if you're thinking like a live production, like you're pretty far along, at least as far as like the actual like building and logistics and hiring.
That takes a long time just for the physical setup and then usually rehearsing with the actual cast and crew members and all the tech, that's usually 1 to 2 months already.
Yeah.
And it's already August, the fact that it was supposed to come out 2 months later. People would be already rehearsing right now.
Right. So the network claims that they have completely postponed this and they're going to revisit it in 2018. But they blamed budget constraints. I mean, these are very pricey shows, like we said, with little return. I don't know. I wouldn't be running to see The Little Mermaid myself. It's just not, you know, not necessarily my flavor.
I'm just curious how they would even pull that off with, you know, the story being underwater. Humans can't breathe underwater. So how the heck are you just visually going to show that off to make it aesthetically pleasing? I imagine probably a lot of onset live green screening. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. They did say they were going to introduce live action, like a hybrid with cartoons.
Okay.
So I guess that's how they would make up for like us, the singing lobsters and whatever, you know.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yes. So I guess that's how they would do it, which could be very expensive. Like that whole Wonderful World of Disney look of the old school, you know, live action with the cartoon, which would be kind of a nice throwback, but it's not happening. And NBC is facing you know, a delay with Bye Bye Birdie with J-Lo just because of her crazy schedule alone, which I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah.
She does everything.
Girl's busy. She runs restaurants. She has multiple careers. And the fact that she's still having a great career after, you know, her longevity is really good. So good for her. The fact that she's still working. Also, Shades of Blue is really a hit for her. Yeah. So she's working.
The World of Dance, her Vegas show. Yeah, she's really busy.
That's understandable to cancel that due to just more, instead of, you know, production problems, it's more casting or like her scheduling
time,
problem.
Yeah. I don't know. At first, I was like, well, just do it with someone else then. But I guess if she's already signed on for it, it's too late. And she's J-Lo. I mean,
she's
you know,
she brings in the crowd.
Yeah, that's true. So I don't know what they're going to do. Oh, that's what they're revisiting in 2018 is Bye Bye Birdie. The Little Mermaid, they just said it's postponed and they need to give it enough attention and they don't have the bandwidth right now. So both are kind of hanging in limbo. And then Fox is going to do A Christmas Story around the end of the year and then Rent early next year. So I mean,
I'm
Rent
for both of those.
Yeah, I'll watch A Christmas Story. Rent was never my show. I tried, but that
really, I love Rent.
Yeah,
I love the music in Rent. I love the stories, and you know, usually the different types of productions that I've seen in Rent, the castings were really good, and the chemistry is just there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the great thing about Rent, the storylines are really timeless, so they're still relevant now. Even that was back in the 90s.
Right. I kind of like the idea of these musicals around the holidays. I'm like, you know, to tune into one in the middle of August or October. I like the ones like, you know, like they have the Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting and all the events around the holidays. And those, they take out the relic cartoons on CBS and like on like December 1st and they're over before the month begins practically. That's when I'm like prepared to watch like a special or something like this. So I think they should just stick to like holiday stuff.
Have you seen the Christmas Story musical?
I don't believe so.
I haven't seen the Broadway, but I have seen a production, and it's really fun. Adults enjoy it, kids enjoy it, and because it is a family-related story, a lot of people could enjoy it, so that would actually be good.
Hey, no, is this the one with the ghosts?
A Christmas Story.
These are the ones with the guy.
No, that's Christmas Carol.
Oh.
A Christmas Story is the one that with, you know, you'll shoot your eye out.
Okay, that one. Then I was like, wait a minute. No, because that's the one with the guy who had the ghost who was the evil man. Oh, my God. That's a Christmas Carol.
There's a lot of Christmas stories.
I know.
That's a Christmas Carol.
Okay.
That's Dickens. Charles Dickens.
Right. I was going to say, because I wonder how that would be.
If they did
together.
A Muppets one, I'm for that.
Yeah. All right, then A Christmas Story. Yeah, I mean, I've seen the movie a million times. I should know this, but...
Yeah, no, they do get all confusing.
Yeah, they're very similar. What can we say? Well, when it comes to these musicals, as far as ABC goes, I think it has to be a blessing and a curse to produce them, because you've got an amazing catalog that you can pull from that you own the rights to. You don't have to pay really anybody. You can just say, we're going to do this, and we're pulling from our company, our, you know, the Walt Disney Company. But it's a curse, because you have to maintain a certain standard, and I'm sure that there's a lot of eyes on it, and it has to be perfect, because it represents the whole company, and this is, like, the best you can do. So.
And also, they do generate a lot of viewers live, and I think society is just used to watching things live. And with the whole pressure, because we've had other musicals beforehand, that it's like every network is trying to one-up each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if they feel like they're not going to, you know, be up to par with everybody else, then yeah, they should cancel or postpone.
Yeah. You'd think Disney would be the first to do this with the catalog they have.
Yeah. But. Or just make it an actual movie that's on screen, not on the silver screen,
movie.
On the big,
Yeah. Well, speaking of holiday films and movies for television, let's transition to Hallmark.
Yes!
I know that you're a huge Hallmark girl.
Oh my goodness, you have no idea. Yes. I love Hallmark.
What got you into Hallmark? I'm so curious.
Well, I've always actually liked Hallmark. When I was a teenager, I'd like Lifetime and Hallmark were my thing, and then it kind of fell out a little bit, just, you know, growing up and going through school and life. And actually, it was probably a few years ago, I was going through like a really tough time, struggling like emotionally, financially, you know, the life that is this industry. And I was watching just random Hallmark movies over like the course of a few months, just random. And then the Christmas movies were coming out in the fall, and then I was watching all of those. And then I just really got into watching everything that was on Hallmark. And then I started One Calls the Heart, which is a successful show on the Hallmark Channel. And I started the after show at AfterBuzz TV. And the following is so avid and loyal. It's ridiculous. It's awesome. And then from just starting the after show, I got the attention of the Hallmark producers, executive producers, the whole cast tweets out our show and promotes it. The actual star of One Calls the Heart, Erin Krakow, she's been on our show. The executive producer has been on our show several times.
Wow.
So, and then the fans are just rabid. They love our show. So Hallmark just kind of noticed us. And so I've actually, through that and through osmosis, I just built a great relationship with Hallmark.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
like,
so exciting.
Who knew?
Yeah. So they've got some exciting news. I learned a lot in my research about Hallmark, and I really admire them as an independent company. You know, they're privately owned. Mm-hmm. They are very secure in their brand and their future. And in a market where cable isn't really doing that great and collapsing, they're actually expanding, which caught my attention. You know, I just did a kind of a general search to see what was going on. And then I went down the rabbit hole and saw all the success that they've been having. And they just really don't get the shine in the press for it.
I know. And it's really upsetting, because there are a lot of movies that are really well written or well acted.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people go to Hallmark for it. Like, it's admittedly, some are very campy and some are just really just feel good. And that is usually what doesn't get the, you know, Emmy nominations or that buzz. It is just something to watch and feel good and not really take seriously. But there is content that's so good that people should be watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I read one of these articles, and they're expanding to Hallmark drama. So they've got the Hallmark Channel, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, and now a third. I mean, that's great. So They're also adding a subscription service, you know, you pay monthly. And I didn't realize this, but they have over 800 hours of content that are just exclusively airing on this SVOD app. So good for them.
Yeah, no, it's great. And Hallmark Drama, like, because I was following the TCAs when that happened last week. And I so wish I could have been there, but, you know, it's a private event thing. But the thing that I found out with the Hallmark Drama, I was so excited about it because there is so much content on both the just Hallmark Channel and Hallmark Movies and Mystery. There's a lot of drama on both. And the fact that they're taking a lot of that and putting it now, really categorizing it under a directly drama, people now know where to go to if they want to watch a specific show. Or right. And they're bringing back old content that aired like 5-10 years ago and putting it on drama. So they're resurging a lot of their old stuff.
Mm-hmm. In this world of niche, I mean, it's very smart.
It is.
It's very smart. And I'm glad to see they're doing so well when other networks can't seem to last. So they seem really committed to the game. And they said that business has never been better for them. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, their numbers are actually crazy ridiculous. They're on par with a lot of regular actual networks like NBC, CBS. And people don't realize Hallmark because it is so niche. Mm-hmm. And you don't really think about it with the other networks. But it's so centralized with certain type of demographic. But it's avid and consistent compared to maybe you get a premiere on, like, say, NBC, for example. Starts out maybe 15 million, but it will dwindle down to a regular 2 million.
Mm-hmm. And
Hallmark is really good at staying at, like, a 2 to 5 million steady all year, consistently all year round.
That's great. I really admire that in this day and age because I follow a lot of that and it's all not really great news, you know? So it's all like, you know, we're down, you know, we're not going to pick this up and then we're going to dissolve this network or we have to rebrand. So it's nice to actually see that not only can they grow, but they're consistent. And they plan to launch the show along with multiple originals. Like this time, as opposed to others where they have like one or two, they're going to have multiple originals on Hallmark Drama with no commercials, just commercials promoting the other shows, which is so smart.
Excellent. Yes. And the great thing about the Hallmark shows, they're all very woman empowering, which is, I think, a lot of other shows don't do that. And Hallmark, granted, the main demographic is women. But I think it's good because they're strong women stories, which I'm all for.
So you can look out for Hallmark Drama premiering on October 3rd. That'll be when it'll hit television. So you can keep an eye open for that. The more I write about, the more I'm interested in actually trying to get into one of those shows.
Shit.
They did say that it was like very family friendly, and which is nice. And I feel like, I know everyone's all about these Game of Thrones and all this stuff, right. But and I enjoy that stuff to a degree. Like, I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I watch, like, Breaking Bad and all that type of stuff. But it is kind of nice to watch something that's wholesome and just it's enjoyable. You know, I feel like I need a little bit of that, even if it's just background, you know? So I'm actually kind of curious to check out. I've heard a lot about When Quells the Heart. I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah, the Hardys are fantastic.
Yeah.
Love it. I'm actually going to Vancouver to meet the cast again and be with the Hardys because it is such a big show and people love it so much that the fans themselves created a yearly event, all self-produced, by them, like no one's asking for money. They all organize it on their own and invite the cast. And Hallmark is so on board that they help get the cast on. And yeah, everyone just goes to Vancouver to be with them for 3 days. It's great.
So I can't tell people enough how rare that is for certain shows and certain networks to get behind anything like that. I mean, I haven't had the most experience with, you know, the best experience, like getting traction and results, people writing back and all this stuff. But they seem to really value the audience they have, which is great. And I mean, you're capitalizing on it. Perfect.
They do. And, you know, I do When Quells the Heart and Chesapeake Shores. And as we speak about that, one of the cast members literally just tweeted me from Chesapeake Shores as I'm looking at my phone. So I'll answer that
you're
later.
Into it. You're
oh,
into
no.
it.
It's like,
yes.
The cast loves our show. It's great.
That's awesome.
Or like they, at least they know of us enough right. to just already interact with us.
That's great. August 2nd was, according to L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti, Will and Grace Day here in L.A., and they had a big thing on the Universal lot and the ribbon cutting and the sign was installed. And I still haven't walked by it yet. I work nearby, but I have to check it out. I have to see what it looks like.
I haven't seen it in person, but I follow all of them on social media. Like, yeah. I love Will and Grace. I own all the seasons. So the fact that it's coming back, I'm very, very excited for.
Yeah, I'm excited for it too, just because there's a lot of excitement, for lack of a better term, there's a lot of excitement around it. Mm-hmm. They're really making a huge deal about it, and they've picked up 16 episodes, which includes two that they recently added, and a full second season. So it's great when you can get behind a show, similar like what you were saying with Hallmark, that the network believes in. It's not going anywhere. You can get invested. You can believe in it, that it'll be there. So those are the best types of shows.
I love it. And I think because we're in this time where people just are getting nostalgic and wants their old good television content back, and the fact that Will and Grace can come back with a full cast, all of them are returning, and it sounds like it's already going to be a successful reboot. And they've said, the cast have said it in the past few years, you know, you always see them, you know, on social media still together. They still very much, you know, love being with each other, and now they're all back, actually back in action. Everyone's excited.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about it. And when it comes to like these shows that come back, they usually come back on different platforms. Mm-hmm. So I think for NBC, this is the first like reboot on their broadcast network.
Yeah. And they aired on NBC when they, you know, were first airing. So and they're coming back. Everyone's excited. I'm so excited.
There's an article out, and I'm trying to find it while I'm speaking here, but that now NBC, there's rumors, I don't know anything, this is just an article from like Huffington Post, that they want to bring back The Office and 30 Rock and a bunch of older shows. I don't know how they would, I mean, I would love it if they brought back The Office, but who the hell knows how they would do it.
I actually didn't watch The Office. I've watched 30 Rock, though. It'd be great if they brought Parks and Rec back, too. But yeah. I think it's good because there was a time when NBC like had all the best shows.
Yeah.
And I think they're slowly getting to that again.
Yeah, I mean, they are doing really well, and their comedy, they've got a stable block. And that's what's interesting about looking at Will and Grace as a network comedy being multicam, the old style, you know, really, which has been CBS's market for so long. Yeah, notoriously cheap shows to produce. They've got great returns to the network. And then you've got shows like all their other comedies are these single camera comedies like The Good Place and Superstore. Modern Family is a classic example of how they're shot, which is more expensive. And that's really been the industry norm, at least for like the last 5 to 9 years. So it's nice to go back to a strong show that's done multi-camera. I'm very biased to multi-camera because that's what I studied at school, and I wanted to direct multi-camera. And then the soaps went away, a lot of those sitcoms went away, and we're left with very little multi-cam. So I'm a big advocate for them.
Yeah, we need to bring it back. And I love the live sitcoms too. You know, I think Friends did such a great job with that.
Yeah.
And everyone misses Friends too. So it's great to bring back a show that we already love, and it's multi-camp, because I felt like we were, like you were saying, we did get away from that for a while. But I was okay with that because the good content that was, you know, the single camps are still funny.
Right.
But it's good to go back to your roots in a sense.
Yeah, and it's a great look for NBC, I think, to go back to that and have the show shot that way. And they're not reinventing it. They're having the same director come and do the remainder of the new shows, which he did all the previous ones.
Yeah.
They had a really nice press. I believe so. Yeah,
James Burrows did like every episode of Will and Grace.
Yeah. They had some really nice press, especially at one point the producers had sued NBC. This was under a different regime. And so they dropped that lawsuit now because it's all different execs, and that's so the business. So everyone seems to be really happy with this. I'll be looking. I do not remember if I watched the finale, though, of the previous run on NBC, but they said they're ignoring it.
Good.
Yeah.
I remember watching, because, you know, I own the seasons, but watching it, the finale was so disappointing for people who have watched it for 8 years. And then the finale just kind of scrapped everything and wrote a storyline people were not thrilled with.
Mm-hmm. What did they do? They had the kids of both Will and Grace meet.
There was a falling out between Will and Grace, and that's the whole, you know, foundation of the show. Their friendship is what made it. And they had a falling out. They got married, went their separate ways, had their kids, are now in college. and they're right next to each other by the dorms, so they meet up again. Will and Grace meet up again in the hall, and kind of. But the fact that all these years have passed and they weren't friends anymore, they weren't in communication, talking to each other, and they're only re-meeting each other just because they're college kids. People didn't like that.
Yeah. I think I did see that. As you're explaining it, wasn't that like the last scene?
Yeah, it was the last scene. It was the last episode, and then the last scene was all of them taking shots at a bar, but back to their regular humans, back to their normal selves before the time jump. But people, it was a messy finale.
No wonder why they're ignoring it. Yeah, no.
And good for them. I'm all for that. Scrap it. It was not good.
Yeah, because then that's the thing. Then you have to write stories about them being parents. No one wants to see that on Will and Grace. You know what I mean?
No one.
Then it turns into like that girl meets world, and it's like a different generation of people. And it takes the shine away from these four who are iconic, and that's what people are watching for. So. Yes, I'll be looking. I think it's going to be interesting to see the numbers. And they're smart to pick up two seasons. That was my problem with a lot of these networks for a while. Even before I worked at NBC, back in the day when it was like the Jeff Zucker days, and they would cancel things overnight. So I was always afraid to get into anything. But they've really turned that around, I will say. And they don't execute shows as fast as they used to and like make them disappear from the schedule.
Well, I think they're being more selective now. The ones that they actually are executing, they need to know that they can last for a long time and bring in numbers, longevity. Yep,
that's
so
true.
Already two seasons, great for them.
You know, they mentioned in this article I read over, I believe it was over on Variety, that Fox is doing something similar with the X-Files. And I said, wait a minute, X-Files was already on.
Yeah.
So they had a handful of episodes in the beginning of 2016, which I heard nothing about.
Oh, it was very successful, actually. I know Glenn Morgan, who is the executive producer. He created X-Files. He's the nicest guy.
That's rare.
he follows me. I did another show on HBO. It was called The Intruders. We did the after show, and I got connected with him. The nicest guy. He loves AfterBuzz. I can literally call him up or email him, be like, hey, can you come on Wednesday at this time? He's like, just tell me when and where.
Wow.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy.
That's so rare.
And he's so unassuming, too. He's very like soft-spoken and kind of timid. You would never think this guy had created all this amazing stuff, like the X-Files. He created the Final Destination movies. He has a successful career.
Damn.
Most humble guy ever.
Yeah. Wow.
Glenn Morgan.
Huh.
So when X-Files came back, I called him up immediately, and he came on our show and talked about it. It had a good, it was only like, I think, six episodes.
Yeah,
it was really short.
Yeah, so it was like, I think it might have been eight at most.
Yeah, six to eight. It was a really short number count. But for that short amount of time, it got a big resurgence.
Yeah, the ratings were good for it. It didn't cross my, path at all. I didn't pick up on anything. I don't remember seeing advertisements for it. That's what I had thought that they had it previously, because I know they're coming up with more. And I believe that's next year. And I was like, wait a minute, how come I never heard anything about it? Came and went. But I guess it did really good. So good. Yeah. I mean, they would have to for them to bring it back.
I never really watched The X-Files. I know it'd actually be a show completely up my alley, but I was so young when it first
aired.
I was literally a kid. And the opening sequence always scared the crap out of me.
I remember, yeah.
And I can never, even as an adult, it still scares me. And I just couldn't get myself to get past the opening credits.
It's a great concept, and it should absolutely have a platform now with just the whole mania behind crime and supernatural and all the just everything. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for it to be on right now.
Yeah.
So when we return, we're going to be talking more with Marissa. I really want to know more about what she's been up to at AfterBuzz, because we've crossed paths and worked together for so long. I want to know more. So let's be here in a moment to catch up with Marissa.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Subscribe and spread the word.
There are a lot more rants to come.
Listen anytime on all major podcasting platforms.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back talking with Marissa Serafini, the senior content producer at AfterBuzz TV Networks. And you oversee not just AfterBuzz, people. It's a lot. I mean, you've got Black Hollywood Live, Book Circle Online, and Popcorn Talk.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to oversee and a lot of moving parts. I mean, I spent some time volunteering over there and saw the amount of flow of traffic and people and guests. And this was 2 years ago, and the network has only grown probably tenfold since. So I could only imagine how busy. So what did you exactly oversee?
I wear many hats at AfterBuzz, a lot of things. We've hired a lot of different people to do certain tasks, but I know how to do it all. But we hired more people to do it, so I don't have to do it all.
Yeah.
What I particularly do as of right now, I open the studios in the morning because I'm more of the morning person. No one, because our shows, we're after shows, we're at night, and we go sometimes to 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. No one wants to be at the studio at 8 o'clock the next day.
Hell no.
With that. Yeah. 7-hour turnaround, so I'm that person. I'm the one that's at the studios early in the morning opening it up, and I prep everything. So I turn on the studios, I turn on the audio, all the computers, like all the equipment. I turn it on and get everything started, and I prep the lower thirds that have the correct guest names and their Twitters and the correct host names, correct episode title names. Something as simple as the lower third graphic that's actually on the show. I'm the one that changes all that on a day-to-day basis. I create all the live events on YouTube. So every episode I create to put it into the websites, I do a lot of the pre-production work. And then, you know, throughout the day, maybe 4 hours later, people start pouring into the studios to actually execute the shows. Mm-hmm. So, and then I help with that. I train all the engineers how to actually physically start and end and everything in between of the actual shows. I do a lot of different things.
Wow, yeah. I know. Do you touch, what do you do with the other networks, like the Popcorn Talk or a Book Circle? Is it similar? Or yeah. Do you have different responsibilities?
It's the same thing. I still prep those shows as well. And I also host on a lot of those shows too. I host on Popcorn Talk. Right. I host on Book Circle. Black Hollywood Live is the only one I actually don't have a show. That's more of our ethnic type of Black African American perspective. But also, you know, a lot of ethnicity is into that, and you get that urban culture perspective. I actually don't do a show on that one.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever done one either, to be honest.
Yeah. It's okay. I do a lot.
Yeah, I know. That's really why I feel like I cover enough. So about how many shows are produced on average a day now?
We're in our summertime, which is actually, I wouldn't say shorter, but it's slower than our fall winter. Mm-hmm. So we're about anywhere from 20 shows, usually on a day-to-day basis, it's like 20 to 25. We're in the fall, we can get up to 42 a day, 42 hours of content a day. Yeah, 42 Yikes. Individual shows. It's crazy.
There's a huge margin for error when it comes to stuff like that because things are always changing. That can be tough.
Yeah, and my job is so detail-oriented that if I misspell one thing, that's a whole hour of re-recording, a whole hour of the studio that we lose just for one little mistake. So it's a lot of work, especially when we have such a condensed schedule, when we're up to 35 to 40 shows a day, we don't have an hour to spare.
Right.
So everything has to be correct. Yeah. First,
when it comes to the shows being on YouTube and then the shows being listened to through the podcast apps, what's the ratio between views and downloads?
Oh, it's ridiculously different. Our bigger numbers are on iTunes.
Right.
In total, just AfterBuzz alone, let alone our other networks, AfterBuzz itself generates 1.3 billion audio downloads a year on average. So you split that up between 200-250 shows that we do year round. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Compared to our YouTube is bigger in the live events or live viewing. So there are some shows that can get up to 500 viewers live.
Wow. I've never had any of those.
But then after when the show's done and you can just go back and rewatch them, they can be anywhere from 200 views to 50,000 views. So,
but still a small margin.
The numbers are greatly different, but they serve different purposes.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, let's talk about your time actually working. I want to talk about your time working outside of AfterBuzz. I know you worked on American Idol for a while.
And
working on set on these shows, which is no small feat to get these opportunities. I know we talked about this. It's hard to even get a basic job.
Yeah, I did it. It was great. I actually started on So You Think You Can Dance. But because So You Think You Can Dance is... the production offices are literally in the same building as American Idol. And the cast and crew members are the same people as the same production company. So when I was done with the So You Think You Can Dance, I just kept up with the producer. I was like, if you need me for anything, I would love to help out in any shape and form. And then maybe a month later, his name is Joe. He called me up and he's like, I need help for the American Idol finale. So this was season 14. I think they had 15 seasons. I'm so lost in numbers.
Yeah, I think we'll keep track, especially now with this new season. I can't even talk about it.
It was crazy because So You Think You Can Dance, I was on season 12. And then American Idol, I think I was on 14. So the numbers throw me.
Yeah.
But my first day on American Idol was the live finale. Talk about the craziest day to be thrown into production. It was organized chaos. I was running back and forth here and there from production. I was going to the Fox studios. I was going to CBS studios. I was doing everything. And then there was a time where one of the editors actually handed me a hard drive. And he was so, granted, my first day in American Idol, he was so serious and looked me like dead straight in the eye. He's like, give this directly to this person. I'm like, okay. He's like, this is the edited package of the winner. I'm like, what? I'm like, you're giving this to me? He's like, it was two hard drives. And he's like, and apparently they edit two different versions. Like the one edit is the contestant who won, and one edit is the contestant who lost in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave this to me. He's like, put it directly in this person's hand. And make sure he gets it. I'm like, okay. So then, like, the biggest feat that I had to do was hand over this hard drive that literally had the video package of the winner. Like, oh, crap.
Yeah, pressure.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing with American Idol, I was only brought on technically for 3 days. So there was the live finale, and then the day after for cleaning, and then day after that to move everything out of the production offices. You know, once the show wraps up, you have to get out. Mm-hmm. And so I was brought on for 3 days, and then there was so much work, and apparently they liked me so much, they kept me on for 6 months. So within those 6 months, one season technically ended, and then we started the next season. So technically, I was on two seasons.
Right. So where do you stand right now with production?
The only production I do is AfterBuzz TV, but I do love whenever I get the chance on a weekend to work on someone's, you know, promotional event or some type of production, whether it be camera work or just a simple position such as production assistant. I just love being in that environment. That's more my bag.
Yeah. Would you go back to reality TV?
It depends on reality TV, because I was on Reality Competition, and I feel it's a completely different structure than actual reality.
This is true, yeah.
But if someone offered me a production assistant or like a production gig, I'd so be for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely a hard worker. I mean, I don't know. You were telling me how you balanced that and you still did AfterBuzz, and I mean,
I did not sleep. And I didn't really complain about it. Well, it was more so because I knew that's, you know, kind of the production I wanted to be in. So I did whatever it took for me to do production. There were nights I'd be sleeping in my car for 4 hours in a parking lot at Target. And I would just wake up and, like, not even go home. I would wake up and go to my next job in the morning. Because I'd work American Idol from 9 to anywhere from 5 to 6. And then I would go to AfterBuzz from, like, 7 to midnight. And then I would repeat the day.
Yikes.
Go to American Idol again. Go back to AfterBuzz afterwards. Like, so no sleep whatsoever.
Oh my God, I have such a respect for you. That is, I think I would cry. I really do. I think I'd be angry.
There were times I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, so just to give people a perspective, working on like the live show for American Idol, of course, I assume it was a 1 hour live broadcast, mm-hmm. but for how many hours were you working that day, just to give people a perspective of time?
I'd get there from 9. Well, I was in more the summertime, mm-hmm. so summer was more the office work.
Mm-hmm. So but for like a live show.
For a live show, you'd start at maybe 5 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. and then go to 1, 2 a.m., only have a 3-4 hour turnaround.
Damn.
And go again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy work. Yeah. I also did that for So You Think You Can Dance. I only had a 4 hour turnaround.
I mean, in the time that I spent working, I worked for some real cheap production companies, and they didn't want to pay any of that overtime or any of those what do they call them, like a slap on the wrist if you don't have the overtime, you know, like a penalty.
Oh yeah, penalty.
They
yeah.
didn't want to pay any of those, so even meal penalties. I mean,
second
it was so
meal, second
yeah.
lunch.
So, oh, none of that. Second. Yeah. So I never really had that opportunity, which is kind of a blessing now that I think about it.
Well,
but
we
I mean, but you, yeah, but you probably made up with money. I mean, I guess did they compensate you? I mean, I
was oh yeah.
yeah,
yeah, they were good, and I love that because it was so you think you can dance in American Idol. They had the money for
yeah,
it,
that's true.
Not like a small production company such as AfterBuzz kind yeah. of really don't, but they did. My first day at So You Think You Can Dance, we were already 2 hours behind, and so we were already crossing the second meal. So everyone had to get food again, and they had to pay for it, but they did.
Wow, yeah. So. Yeah. That's so interesting, but I don't miss that lifestyle for myself.
See, I love
yeah.
it. I'm a person, I have so much energy, I'd rather actually put into something useful, physical, and constructive compared to being stuck in one place. I don't like that. I'd like to actually physically move around and do something.
Yeah.
That's the kind of environment I strive in. That's why I love production.
There really is nothing more exciting than walking on to like a hot set
yeah.
for a show, and
yep.
it's they're filling in the audience, or they're on a break and everything is like on hold, but it's like could switch on in a second. So exciting. There's such energy there. I know what you mean.
I look at
people like that at work, because I walk through the sound stages during lunch and I'm like, oh, that I wish I could do that. But then I realize how low, like the voice there, they tape the voice at work. I'm like, oh, that'd be so great to work on that show. But these people are like clocking 14 hour days, and that's Monday, and that's one day down, and
yeah.
you don't even know when you're getting, sometimes you don't know when you're getting your next day off. Especially
yeah.
if you're like loading in, like building the set and hanging the lights, you really don't know when you're going to have time off.
Yeah. And it's also sometimes really frustrating when you spend so much time on the setup. The striking of the set is half that, not even.
Mm-hmm.
Like you spend hours setting up a perfect production lighting, and then it takes 30 minutes to break down. And that's
wow.
it. Like,
yeah.
oh man, all that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I love the live aspect too of the actual production. I worked on, not to drop all these things that I worked on, I did work on James Corden, The Late Late Show, for a hot second, and it was so drastically different from the production in the morning in the offices that I did, which was just mm-hmm. like restocking the craft service, something
right,
as simple
yeah.
and mundane as that, but to the live shows at night where I was interacting with the bands that would come in, the sometimes I'd had to like put something in the dressing room of the actual guest that was there, it's such a different environment.
Mm-hmm.
And
those shows,
feel.
Yeah, those shows are like super well-oiled machines, like the soaps
oh, yeah.
and late night.
Judiciously, like
yeah.
right on schedule.
Those are the gigs to work on, like,
because yeah.
you've got security, you know, you're working 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I tried so hard to get a regular, because I was a day runner on that,
mm.
But I tried so hard to get a regular
yeah.
time, full-time position there. So.
Oh, I know. Those jobs are, I know. For me, either, don't feel too bad. Those jobs are the golden opportunities that people who realize it really fight for them. But people don't realize that until they do the jobs
mm-hmm.
and then they come from working like an 18 and a half hour day and like, wait a minute, this is pretty damn good. We're in an air-conditioned studio.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's in-house. Those are the gigs.
You get paid for overtime if you do go overtime.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. It was fun.
Tell me a little bit more about your time with Hallmark and the set visits and your relationship with them. Anything kind of interesting that you want to share?
Oh, there's so many interesting things. It's really great. The fans of Men Calls the Heart and just Hallmark in general are so loyal to a fault. Mm-hmm. And I've worked on other big shows, and I've hosted other big shows like Once Upon a Time and Glee. Those has huge numbers for those networks. But those fans were not as nearly as interactive as the Hallmark fans. Like, they really watch you and pay attention and, like, support you and all your other endeavors outside. Or, like, hey, I'm going to this today. They're like, oh, good luck. You know, yeah. I never got the interaction from my yeah. other shows. And I've actually met a lot of these people because they are friends. They have generated actual lifelong friendships, and people support each other if they're going through a health issue. People send flowers, you know, if or they send donations to their family to help send pay for bills. It's
wow.
ridiculous. It's like, it's literally more of a family type of fan audience than people who just watch you. And because of that, I go to Home and Family, which mm-hmm. tapes at Universal Studios.
Yeah,
and
the talk show. I've yeah. seen a lot of stuff coming out of Home and Family. I like their guest booking, because they book kind of alternative guests, perhaps that had big careers and soaps like back mm-hmm. in the day, or like people who aren't. It's not the usual, like, they do, this one does Regis and Kelly, this one does Ellen. This, it's right. like the same people doing the same things, but this is alternative, and that's why I like Home and Family.
Yeah, they're cool. And I think they have a great demographic too, because they span so many different age ranges. They, you know, you have people from the soap, and you have kids, and then you have musicians, and then you also have cooks and interior decorators, and like all these different types of personalities on that show. And I think that's also good. But because they're in, you know, relationships and partnerships with Crown Media, who, you know, the owner of Hallmark, a lot of the Hallmark stars are on Home and Family by, you know, through osmosis
right,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So I go there for a lot for the live tapings that the audience tapings mm-hmm. and whenever there's a Ben calls the Heart cast member there are three, like 30 to 50 other Hearties that are also there, and people who've watched my show and people who've watched me and know who I am. And it's weird mm-hmm. because usually I've done AfterBuzz for years but not ever really had interactions like in person
right,
with people
yeah.
who watch my shows. And like, I'm getting all this feedback that they love when we talked about this on the show, and people who just generally care. It's mm-hmm. it's really cool. And
that's
they're
awesome.
They're so nice. They create events where you, like on the weekend, we all get together and have lunch and tea.
Wow, this yeah. is like a little subculture
it
of
is.
People.
Like, people, we generally just like each other. It is a family, kind
wow.
of, and they create all these events just to meet up with each other, all these meetups.
I had no idea. No, I
had no idea either.
Hallmark, honestly, is never on my radar until the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like I'm missing out on like a little exclusive club of nice people. Like, where are these people?
Yeah, and that's the thing. They are so incredibly nice. I was just in the Midwest a couple of weeks ago because, you know, I'm from Illinois. And I was traveling from Illinois to Michigan. And I tweeted out her and like talked to people that I've made connections with. It's like, hey, I'm going to be in Michigan this week. I would love to meet up just for coffee. And three people drove up. I was in the northern part of Michigan, and three mm-hmm. people drove up 3 hours. They came from Indiana just to have coffee with me.
Wow.
And then I was in Illinois. I went back to Illinois, and I told them, hey, I'm in my home state this week. Love to meet up and have coffee. Eight people drove up, and we all had coffee and lunch together.
That's insane.
Like,
I love
people that. Drove from Chicago, which is 2 hours away from, you know, where I live, and other people came from Springfield. People drove like 2 to 3 hours just to have lunch.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Like, who
That's
does
great.
That? No, it was so yeah. incredibly nice. And these were people who knew about our show and knew what we did and just mm-hmm. wanted to have lunch. Asked for nothing in return other than just, you know, having
just a chat.
Just
That's
meet.
The best. Yeah. yeah. I met with a listener, Lois, who I love, in New York recently. And that was the first time I had ever done anything like that. And it was kind of, well, actually, I don't know if that was the first. I think I've met a few other people, but that was like the first, like, we're going to plan to meet. And it was really kind of nice, but it was only one. So I'm nowhere near the status of the Hearties and Marissa.
Yeah. Yes. The Hearties are so great. And yeah. like, we get fan mail from them. Or
That's
like,
awesome.
People like, are always, there's one who I've become good friends with Jordan Blackstone. She's super, super talented. She's a painter and a photographer. She paints like oil on canvas, gorgeous oils on canvas. She gave me an oil on canvas picture that I had actually requested. I was like, I would love to see if you could paint this. And I obviously I would pay for it. And it's like anywhere from $200 to $300. I was like willing to pay for it. And she gave it to me as a gift.
Wow.
It was gorgeous.
That's awesome. These people are amazing. Yeah. Send me a picture. We can tweet it out for the show. And why not? We'll just cross promote. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, these are fans, like actual genuine fans who love the show and like us.
Yeah.
And like, I never thought I'd have such a positive reaction from such a simple little show.
So you do a lot of things, you know, a lot of people. Where do you see yourself going? What are your goals right now?
Production. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, right now I do studio production. And like, I have the ins and outs of how to start things, how to manage people, run schedules, coordinate. So I do have all those skills set for that. But I've always, even, you know, when I first started off being a film major, I always just wanted to be on actual set, live set, whether it be television or film, the live set production, second AD.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's my position that I know I can do.
That's great.
Kill it.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, I loved having you on and really dishing, talking Hollywood talk. Of course, you know so much and you really do a lot. So you're perfect for this show because you have a lot of insight and I appreciate that. So thank you for coming in. We'll chat again. And, you know, in the meantime, where can we find you? What do you want to promote?
I do a lot of things on AfterBuzz TV, and you can follow me on Twitter at Serafini TV. I'll spell that for people who don't know. Serafini TV.
And you guys can find her contact information in the information related to this episode. And as a reminder, you can find my articles over on Reality Tea. Nothing is posted as of now, but on Monday, the 14th of August, you can find my first article that will be out related to the Real Housewives of Dallas. So you can find that coming up. Keep an eye open. I love you for listening. We'll be back with more rants.
We're done. Please leave. I'm asking you to leave.
This has been Grant's Rants. Support the Rants on Patreon. Follow us on Twitter at It's Grant's Rants.
Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Aw Yeah. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arntzen. The Grant Michael Collection.